Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, August 24th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, COVID impacting younger Midlanders. Midland Health. The most patients in any age group are those 30 to 39. By Stuart Doreen. Five people died of COVID-19 related issues at Midland Memorial Hospital over the weekend, bringing the total number of deaths this month to 18. The ages of those passing away this weekend range from 25 to 91, according to Midland Health's COO, Stephen Bowerman. He said all five people were unvaccinated, and that there has yet to be an unvaccinated Midland County resident to pass away because of COVID-19 at Midland Memorial Hospital. The number of deaths involving Midland County residents ranks at the bottom of larger population counties in West Texas, according to statistics from the Texas Department of State Health Services. The 287 deaths were tied for 37th most of all counties in Texas. El Paso County ranked 5th overall with 2,771, Lubbock was 11th with 820, Taylor, Abilene was 23rd with 423, Potter, Amarillo was 24th with 404, Hector was 26th with 378, Randall, Canyon, and Amarillo was 34th with 303, and Tom Green, San Angelo, was 36th with 289. Bowerman made a point to mention the COVID Delta variant is having an impact on younger Midland County residents during this latest spike in cases. He said there are more younger inpatients. The most patients in any age group are those 30 to 39, 23. The second most are in the 40 to 49 age range, 22. In fact, there are more COVID inpatients younger than 49 years of age and older, and no patients older than 80. But he also said that the hospital is seeing younger patients pass away, including a 25 and 28-year-old recently. Both, Bowerman said, had no pre-existing conditions. Bowerman also talked about the number of inpatients of all ages, which rose this week to 112 on Monday morning. The record for the most COVID patients inside Midland Memorial Hospital during the pandemic is 116. Here are more things to know about Monday's COVID report. Of the 112 in the hospital, 87 are unvaccinated, 77.6%. The 112 COVID inpatients is 49.7% of the total 225 inpatients at Midland Memorial. Around 87% of Midland's 258 inpatient rooms are filled. Last week, the positivity rate was 30.4% from the 1,082 tested at MMH testing centers. On Monday morning, there were 21 admissions waiting in the ER but didn't have rooms assigned. There are 20 COVID patients on ventilators. There are 19 vents available, according to Midland Health officials. There were 188 emergency room visits on Sunday. There were 26 staff members that are COVID positive and another 60 that were quarantining at home. This article is entitled, COVID Therapy is Nothing New for Midlanders. Midland Health COO, 30 people received treatment on Saturday. By Stuart Doreen. Last week, Medical Center Hospital in Odessa announced a partnership that will allow it to open a Regeneron Infusion Center at the MCH campus. It's the same treatment that has been available in Midland for around a year for those at high risk of disease progression. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, the FDA has issued emergency use authorizations for a number of investigational monoclonal antibodies that can attach to parts of the virus. These antibodies could help the immune system recognize and respond more effectively to the virus, according to the CDC. If used, they should be administered as soon as possible after diagnosis and within 10 days of symptom onset, the CDC reports on its website. Your healthcare provider will decide whether these investigational treatments are appropriate to your illness. Regeneron is two medications that make up this particular monoclonal antibody therapy, according to information that came out last week about the treatment taking place in Odessa. Monoclonal antibodies are lab-made proteins that mimic the immune system's ability to fight off harmful pathogens such as viruses. Dr. Larry Wilson, Chief Medical Officer for Midland Health, described the Regeneron therapy as getting injected antibodies that take the virus out of the system prior to complicating problems that lead to the subsequent issues that people have. COVID-19 complications, according to the CDC, include damage to the heart, blood vessels, kidneys, brain, skin, eyes, and gastrointestinal organs. This virus affects our bodies by creating an inflammatory cascade that leads to all kinds of complications, Wilson said Monday. He added, COVID can lead to damage in the blood vessels that could lead to clotting problems. He added, any damage to the respiratory tract could compromise one's breathing. If we can clear the virus before you get to that point, then you can avoid all these subsequent complications, Wilson said. And it seems to be pretty effective. To this date, I don't believe we've had more than about 20 patients who have received the therapy end up in the hospital. And we're talking about the highest risk patients that have ended up in the hospital. The therapy is generally for those 55 and older, Wilson stated. It is free, although there might be an administrative fee. Midland Health COO Stephen Bowerman said Monday there were 30 people who received treatment on Saturday alone, so there is interest in monoclonal antibody treatment. So it's been a relatively small number of people that have ended up hospitalized compared to people that don't see that therapy, Wilson stated. The therapy has been so effective for those people that are most vulnerable, that have known positive infection for less than a week to 10 days, that there's been a recent approval for using it as a post-exposure prophylaxis. So again, in that same high-risk population, with a known exposure to somebody with the infection, they are eligible, if the exposure was within that narrow time frame, again, to receive Regeneron therapy as well. This article is entitled MISD, Intercession Will Be Mandatory for Some, by Stuart Doreen. The fall one-week intercession that is part of the new Midland ISD calendar will not be optional for students that failed state accountability tests. Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey let patients know of the policy change in her weekly letter that was emailed Friday. Ramsey wrote that during the intercession week, MISD will provide targeted academic interventions to accelerate the learning and academic growth of identified students. Students who previously did not pass the State of Texas Assessments of Academic Readiness, STAR, will be required to attend. She added that schools will be sending information to parents and guardians of students who will be required to attend as soon as possible. The intersessional calendar, passed in February, provides weeks in the fall and spring when students needing intervention will have opportunity to get that help. During those weeks, those students not needing help will have a one-week break. During that board discussion about the intersessional calendar, it was stated that the weeks would be optional for students. It was during that discussion that one MISD board member had said she didn't want people to have to pick between Disney World and having their children be on campus. More details about the upcoming intersessional week will come out, according to MISD officials. Those plans will include opportunities for other students to take advantage of the week for learning and enrichment opportunities. Ramsey also is expected to let parents know what opportunities there are for parents with childcare issues. Midland ISD's intercession weeks are October 18th to 22nd and February 7th to the 11th. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Benson Headlines MISD's Greatest Hall of Legends Class by Stuart Doreen. Cedric Benson arguably has the greatest resume of any high school running back in the state of Texas. The state titles, the yards, the touchdowns, the performance in state title games, his performance at Texas's highest classification, the first high school football player to adorn Dave Campbell's Texas football. I would like to see someone that compares. I don't think that person exists. It was a shame that Cedric Benson won't be alive to accept his position in the Midland ISD Hall of Legends. If he isn't the greatest high school athlete to come from Midland, wait, what am I writing? He is the greatest high school athlete in our city's history. He was drafted by the Los Angeles Dodgers in his second sport. Former Lee High School track coach Kelvin Ratliff once told me he wanted Benson to run on his sprint relay because psychologically the other runners wouldn't know what to do if they saw Benson anchoring. Benson deserved better than having to wait 9 years after his professional career ended to receive induction into the Midland ISD Hall. Did he make mistakes? I'm sure he did. But to say he wasn't worthy years ago, but is worthy now, doesn't seem quite right. Still, thank you to MISD for finally making the right call on Benson. A class to envy. I will celebrate this 2021 class, the greatest class in the history of the Hall of Legends. In addition to Benson, there is Eric Winston, a man unlike many I have met in my career as a reporter. His maturity was beyond his years as a high school football player, and Winston showed us all how to represent Midland, including as president of the NFL Players Association and speaking out on issues that the rest of us thought were taboo. There are Bryce Hopple and Natalie Hines. By now, our community is quite familiar with these Olympians, and they deserve honors for their efforts as state champions in high school and how they represented Midland on international athletics' greatest stage. They also made Midland proud. And don't overlook Tevis Hurd. Trivia question, what was the only mile race Tevis Hurd won as a senior in high school? Answer, the state meet. Hurd won a UIL state title at Midland High, an accomplishment that I'm not sure will ever happen again. He also ran on cross-country teams that were the best in the state when MHS cross-country was the first dynasty this city ever produced. But his impact on high school athletics has been as great as a community leader. That impact included his family's generosity to the Midland health and running communities and the time he spends working with the next generation of runners. Benson, Winston, Hopple, Hines, and Hurd. There isn't a weak link among the group. There is no borderline legend here. Their induction should be a celebration of the greatest to represent Midland on the fields in high school. On some of sport's greatest stages, and in the case of Winston and Hurd, as leaders when their playing days were done. Congratulations to them all. Legends are exactly what each and every one of them are. This is the local page. This section is called Local Briefs from Staff Reports. Report, ex-jailer allegedly pushed, killed inmate. Paul Galindo, a former jailer with the Midland County Sheriff's Office, was indicted by a grand jury this week in the death of Katarina Rodriguez, an inmate who died after he was pushed and hit his head on a concrete bench. Galindo has been charged with aggravated assault by a public servant, criminally negligent homicide, and tampering with government records, according to a copy of his indictment. On the morning of February 20th, Galindo allegedly pushed Rodriguez during roll call, causing Rodriguez to lose his balance and hit his head on a concrete bench. A custodial death report filed with the Texas Attorney General's office states that Rodriguez walked toward an unsecured door and refused verbal commands to step back. However, according to Galindo's indictment, the jailer allegedly falsely reported the actions of Rodriguez to justify the actions of the said defendant in a use-of-force incident report. The indictment states Galindo allegedly tampered with the government record in order to defraud MCSO and the Texas Commission on Jail Standards. Rodriguez, 51, was in a holding cell after being arrested for public intoxication 2 days earlier, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. He was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital after hitting his head, where he was placed on life support and never regained consciousness, before dying on March 7th. 5 employees were placed on administrative leave on March 22nd in connection with Rodriguez's death, but they returned to work on April 8th, according to Sheriff David Kreiner. The Texas Rangers investigated the incident and submitted the case to the Midland County District Attorney's Office. The names of the other employees who had been placed on administrative leave have not been released. Galindo was being held at the Midland County Jail on a $300,000 bond, but was released on Friday, according to jail records. Collision splits Mustang in half. A 29-year-old man is dead after a vehicle crashed into a traffic light pole Sunday morning at the intersection of South Garfield Street and West Wall Street. The man was the passenger in a blue Ford Mustang, and around 2:50 a.m. the vehicle was traveling southbound on Andrews Highway at a high rate of speed, according to a report from the Midland Police Department. The vehicle passed through the intersection at Garfield and Wall and struck the traffic light pole head-on. The collision split the vehicle in half. The driver, a 31-year-old male, attempted to flee the scene on foot, but was located west of the crash site. He has been taken into custody, charges pending, according to MPD. Teen confesses to shooting. A 15-year-old is dead, and an 18-year-old has been transported to the Midland County Jail after a shooting that happened Saturday night, Sunday morning, according to the Midland Police Department. Midland Police reported that officers were dispatched around 12:13 a.m. to the Park Glen Apartments, 2300 Camp Drive, in reference to a 15-year-old male gunshot victim. The victim was transported and was later pronounced deceased at the hospital. Detectives later located 18-year-old Dwight Washington, who confessed to the shooting, according to Midland Police. Washington was transported to Midland County Jail and has been charged with manslaughter. There is no further information at this time. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, U.S. Holds Largest Sale of Strategic Oil Reserves, by Lucia Kasai, Bloomberg. The U.S. is holding its largest sale of oil from strategic reserves this year at a time when the outlook for fuel demand is darkening amid the resurgent COVID-19 virus. The Energy Department plans to auction off 20 million barrels of crude, twice as much as it offered for sale 3.5 months ago. The oil will be delivered during the fourth quarter, when U.S. demand for gasoline and other fuels typically falters and refineries slow down oil purchases while they shut down equipment for repairs and maintenance. The sale also comes after crude prices have dropped 15% since touching a 6.5-year high in early July, as the spread of the Delta variant threatens to derail the economic recovery and return to business as usual. Companies, including BlackRock, Inc. and Jefferies Financial Group, Inc., are postponing plans to return workers to offices. The reserve, created in 1975 to serve as an emergency stockpile, held 621 million barrels in four underground caverns as of August 13th, Energy Department figures showed. Benchmark American crude futures rose almost 6% on Monday in New York, amid a broader rally in commodities and equity markets. This is the obituary column. August 24th. Domingo Carrizales. July 16th, 1944 to August 19th, 2021. Domingo Carrizales was born at Beeville Memorial Hospital in Beeville, Texas, to Juan and Juanita Carrizales. His childhood years were spent in Normanna, Texas, and he graduated from Pettus High School. Domingo married the love of his life, Paz Andrade Carrizales, in 1967, and they have been together for over 54 years. Domingo has two children, Johnny Joe and Melanie Yvonne, three grandchildren, Gabriel Rodriguez, Antonio, Gatarina, and Christian, and two great-grandsons, Zadrian Ray and Nilo. He is survived by several family members, including his wife Paz, children, grandchildren, his sister Eugenia Carrizales, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday, August 25th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 26th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ernest Clayton Johnson, Jr. Ernest Clayton Johnson, Jr., 90, passed peacefully away at his home in Midland on August 17th. Ernie, as he was known, was born in Dublin, Texas on January 29, 1931, to Ernest C. Johnson and Marjorie Ann Lord. Ernie was preceded in death by his wife Cecilia of 68 years, his parents, sister Beth D. Hallmark, and brother Dick Johnson. He is survived by his children, Susan Weaver, Jim of Wichita Falls, Karen Dunn of Arlington, Texas, and Lee Johnson of Artesia, New Mexico. Five grandchildren, six great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his sister Joy Hall of Houston, brother Jack Johnson of New Orleans, and brother Tim Johnson of Dublin, Texas. Visitation will be held Monday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nallie Pickle Welch Funeral Home. Services will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 24th at the branch at NPW. A reception open to the public will be held August 24th at 7 p.m. at the Lee High School Fieldhouse. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Esther Estella Cordova. Esther Estella Cordova of Midland passed away on August 19th, surrounded by her children and grandchildren. She was 81 years old. She is survived by her sons, Pete Cordova Jr., Vicky, Denny Cordova, Arcee, daughters Belinda Granado, Rudy, Brenda Dominguez, Larry Rodriguez, Sonia Marin, Armando, all of Midland, sisters Eloisa Martinez and Ava Ornelas of Sweetwater, and Rachel Ornelas of Odessa. She is preceded in death by her husband Pete Cordova and son Michael Sutherland, parents Felipa and Pascual Martinez, sisters Margaret Lopez, Rosalba Arona, Michaela Alcala, brothers Manuel Martinez, Pascual Martinez, Elias Martinez, and Daniel Martinez. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Public viewing Tuesday, August 24th, and visitation from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. Family talk from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Matthew Qualls. With humble acceptance of God's will, we announce the passing of Matthew Porter Qualls. Matthew was born May 28, 1981, in Roswell, New Mexico, to John and Janice Qualls. He passed away peacefully on August 10th in Midland. Matthew was preceded in death by his father, John Qualls, his grandparents, Bill and Myrna Qualls, as well as grandparents, Ray and Linda Starbuck of Clovis, New Mexico. He is survived by his mother, Janice Qualls, and his daughter, Madison Avery Qualls, in addition to his brother, Patrick Cole Qualls, and wife, Jessica, as well as his nieces and nephews. In addition, he is also survived by his longtime partner, Kelly Christodoulou, and her children, Bella and Henley, of Lubbock. In lieu of flowers, the family requests those who wish to express sympathy to consider making a donation to their favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Steve Rossler. Steve Rossler, age 70, of Nolanville, passed away on Sunday, August 15th. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 24th at Scott's Funeral Home Chapel, 2425 East Main Street, Gatesville. Visitation with the family will be 1 hour prior to services at the funeral home. Steve was born on February 27, 1951 in Houston to the late Willis and Fay Hall Rossler. He was preceded in death by his parents, mother and father-in-law, Price and Julie Anderson, brother Willis Rossler Jr., and a sister, Donna Rossler. Steve is survived by his wife of 50 years, Lena Rossler, sons Stephen Rossler Jr. and wife Kristen, Kevin Rossler and wife Audrey, as well as his grandchildren and many nieces, nephews, and cousins. In lieu of flowers, the family had requested memorials be designated to San Miguel Catholic Church, 1100 Camp Street, Midland, 79701, or Central Bell County Fire and Rescue, 84th North Main Street, Nolanville, Texas, 76559. Scott's Funeral Home in Gatesville, in charge of arrangements. Death Notices. Claude Urban Jewett, Jr. Claude Urban Jewett, Jr., 75, of Midland, passed away August 22nd. The viewing will be from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday, August 26th, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 9 a.m. Friday, August 27th, at Fannin Terrace Baptist Church in Midland. Graveside service will be at 2 p.m. Friday, August 27th, at Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Abilene. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hi, I'm Kim, reading the Odessa American. It's Tuesday, August 24th, 2021. Tippin, this is not fake news. MCH reaches mass capacity at hospital clinics. By Laura Dennis. On the same day that the FDA granted full approval of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine, local health officials reported alarming numbers of local hospitalizations, as well as a growing crisis in Reeves County. During a Monday Zoom conference with health officials, Medical Center Hospital CEO Russell Tippin continued to urge health precautions and the need to get a vaccine as MCH hit a higher number of COVID-related patients than ever, with 106 over the weekend. Even during the height of the surge in January, Tippin said, MCH didn't reach that number. Not much upside to our conversation today, Tippin said. In January, we hit 103 to 102, but over the weekend we were at 106, very concerning for us. By Monday, the number dropped to 96, with 37 in ICU and 35 of those on ventilators. 29 are not vaccinated. Tippin said it is heartbreaking for patients going on a ventilator to ask for a vaccine. The MC8 patients are ages 13 to 84 and 7 have died since Friday. Choose to have a better chance of survival, he said, of getting the vaccine. Tippin also talked about upcoming events that draw large crowds and said some could be super spreader events. The young kids scare me. They will touch a handrail or a ball or the seat you are sitting on. MCH is pushed to the limit in terms of space and staffing, as is Odessa Regional Medical Center. Dr. Rohith Saravanan, Regional Chief Medical Officer of ORMC, said now is not the time to discuss having large events such as the Permian Basin Fair, as COVID strains the healthcare system and those who work in it. We are past the previous peak, Saravanan said. Saravanan also discussed how desperation and pain drives family members and patients to seek treatments that are not medically approved. He again urged Odessans to trust the science and not to ask for treatments that are not approved, and that in some cases are medications that are for animals, not humans. If they are for animals, that means they are usually not FDA or CDC approved, Tippin added. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons described a hospital staff at its limit and short-staffed. She said more nurses and respiratory therapists are expected from the state, but that the staff is stretched thin, so thin that Tippin said tents for an overflow of patients are not an option at MCH, does not have the staffing for the tents. Tippin also discussed the growing crisis in Reeves County, where a federal camp for immigrant children is overwhelming the hospital, which in turn overwhelms all of us. He said, added that the COVID chickenpox and pregnant young girls are straining the system. They have a disaster on their hands, he said. That disaster will also affect Ector County as patients are moved around when space runs out. The federal problem has now become a local problem, Tippin said. ORMC CEO Stacy Brown said, ORMC and 26 COVID patients as of Monday, with 8 in ICU and 7 on ventilators, well, over 90% are not vaccinated. Brown said another alarming statistic is that about 45% of the patients are 50 or younger. Both Brown and Timmons asked for community support for hospital staffers. Write a note or have a child draw a picture, Timmons suggested. It means a lot to know someone is thinking of them. Other items of note, ORMC's new visitor policy also went into effect on Monday. Tippin said not only is the COVID crisis straining the hospital, but it has also overrun the urgent care centers. Saravanan said ORMC is low on testing supplies and can no longer run the test in-house and will have to send them out. The Regeneron Infusion Center continues on the MCH campus at One Doctor's Place, Suite 700, 500 North Washington. Regeneron is two medications, casirivimab and indevimab, that make up this particular monoclonal antibody therapy. Monoclonal antibodies are lab part proteins that mimic and the immune system's ability to fight off harmful pathogens such as viruses. This therapy is for patients who have tested positive for COVID-19 and are at risk for hospitalization. Not only can it help prevent hospitalization, but it can also ease the symptoms of COVID-19 sooner. A provider can make a referral for patients to receive the monoclonal antibody therapy. The provider will need to confirm their patient is a candidate and would benefit from the therapy. Then call 432-640-2022 to make the appointment. There is also an email to send appropriate documentation at covidinfusioncenter@echd.org. The infusion center will be open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The therapy is free and the entire process takes about 90 minutes. Montessori Mastery Adding New Grades by Ruth Campbell. Montessori Mastery School of Odessa is starting its year with new additions, pre-kindergarten, 3-year-olds through 3rd grade. The school, which started August 23rd, goes through 12th grade. Randy McGuire, who co-directs the school with his wife Gloria, said he doesn't know how many students they will get, but there is a maximum of 20 in each. The McGuires had a friend, Deborah Rainey, who ran Rainey Montessori School. She retired 3 years ago, and no one took her place. So there's been this vacuum. There's a Montessori school up the street, but they end at age 5, and we just wanted to be able to do the complete education journey, McGuire said. It's the right thing to do, he said. If we will fill the lower grades, and we expect to, we'll have approximately 120, McGuire said. He added that Montessori Mastery has highly qualified teachers and teachers' aides. We've been blessed with great staff, McGuire said. He noted that summer is downtime for them, but the Montessori school is what they are called to do. He said they will be glad to get back into a more regular routine with caution due to COVID. Everyone is comfortable with the optional masking, and the school has enough room for social distancing, he said. The challenge is going to be in these lower grades. Everything is manipulatives, so it's going to have to be sanitized. When one child finishes, it will have to be sanitized before they are available for the next child to use it. But we'll be big on all of the sanitation aspects of it, McGuire said. Teachers at Montessori Mastery need their degree for the school's accreditation, but they don't need to be state certified. The school does conduct criminal background checks, but they also know many of those on staff personally. The school is accredited through Cognia, and this is an accreditation year for Montessori Mastery. I think that they're tough, and we wanted someone tough, because we want to make sure that we are doing the very, very, very best that we possibly can do here, McGuire said. The school is located at St. Andrew's Cumberland Presbyterian Church at 1415 North Grandview Avenue. Although they are in the church, they are not run by it. But McGuire said they see it as a ministry. There is a spirituality to Montessori that lifts children and gives them a true lifelong love of learning, he said. McGuire added that it doesn't matter what a student's learning style is, the school will strive to meet their needs. At the same time, the school sets high standards. That's what we're looking at. What do they need, and how do we meet those needs and help them in that journey, he added. The school helps prepare youngsters for the world after school, but he said they don't believe every child needs a college education. There are great careers and professions that don't require a college degree, McGuire said. So that's what we want, is giving them that foundation. If they elect to go to college, they can do that. But if they elect to go into the trades or any other profession, we have a well-rounded curriculum. We're not just focused in on narrow areas of testing, but a well-rounded curriculum to introduce them to the world and the opportunities that exist for them. McGuire said they have total confidence in the Montessori method. It's over 100 years old, and it's highly effective when it's done the right way. And that's our ambition, to do it 100% correctly, he added. They were going to expand the school, but they settled on renovating the rooms because they couldn't get the building contractors lined up. We have painted new lights and new carpet and have beautiful classrooms, but we had the existing space already here, so we didn't have to do the extensive renovations we talked about. We just had to do some sprucing up, McGuire said. City budget hearing set for today. The public hearing for the City of Odessa's 2021-22 operating budget will be held today. Council is being asked to approve a $239,327,076 budget, which will include giving all city staff a 4% cost of living pay increase for 2021-22. City Manager Michael Moreno noted that due to COVID-19 and financial unpredictability, the pandemic poses, no raises were given in 2020. Normally, employees receive an annual 3% raise. Council has also indicated it will support several proposed budgets, including a $1,182,078 for general operations of the Emergency Communication District of Ector County. The Emergency Communication District of Ector County provides 911 telephone and dispatch services cities to Odessa and Goldsmith, which receive these services. Odessa, Goldsmith, and the county must all approve the proposed budget. A proposed budget submitted by the Odessa Developmental Corporation budget for 2021-22 is also expected to receive council support. The ODC's projected total revenue are $7,904,068. Predicted expenditures are $1,547,729. Council is expected to support a request to authorize the nomination of Odessa Regional Medical Center as a Texas State Enterprise Zone, a designation that will allow the hospital to apply for state funds for their capital expenditure project. Council will also consider an invitation to participate in the formation of a joint task force committee to address redistricting issues following the 2020 proposed improvements over the next 5 years include spending $7.5 million for building expansion renovation projects dedicated to women and maternity care, a letter sent to the city by William Stokes, Stewart Health Care's Senior Vice President of Tax, recently detailed. Council will also consider an invitation to participate in the formation of a joint task force committee to address redistricting the issues following the 2020 census. According to the Council's work session agenda, the joint committee will include representatives from the city, Ector County Independent School District, Ector County Hospital District, Odessa Junior College District, and the Ector County City Manager, Michael Moreno, who served as the city's representative. Attorney Natasha Brooks said during council work session last week, council is likely to approve a recommendation to award a $2,351,000 bid to Cooper Construction for the rehabilitation of the city-owned building at 307 North Lee Street. The building will house community development, code enforcement, and the fire marshal's office. The rehab will include a roof replacement and the purchase of office furnishings. Will be paid from 2019 Certificates of Obligation funds. COVID-19 news by the numbers. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 20,645 total cases, 397 deaths. Midland County, 21,334 total cases, 285 deaths. Texas, 3,459,060 total cases, 55,226 deaths. U.S. cases, 37,583,545 total confirmed and 625,375 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at Quick Hits Mutton Bustin' Qualifier. Sand Hill Stock Show and Rodeo has scheduled the Mutton Bustin' Qualifier September 10th and 11th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 North Andrews Highway. Books open PTUQ. Quick Hits. Mutton Bustin' Qualifier. Sand Hill Stock Show and Rodeo have scheduled the Mutton Bustin' Qualifier September 10th and 11th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 North Andrews Highway. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. and rides start at 6 p.m. Must be between the ages of 4 to 7 and under 50 pounds to ride. Entry fee is $40. Ropes, vests, and helmets will be available. To pre-register or for more information, call India Dennis at 432-553-5562 or facebook.com/Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo. Annual Banquet and DWTS. The Odessa Hispanic Chamber of Commerce has scheduled its annual banquet and Bailando con las Estrellas, Dancing with the Stars, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. September 16th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Members who make a difference in community will be recognized. Local Odessa leaders will suit up, and Bailey Folklorico, with assistance from UTPB's Folklorico program. The public can also vote for their favorite celebration for $1 online at odessahcc.org/banquet. Proceeds for this program will benefit the UTPB Folklorico program, select nonprofits, and the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. For tickets or information, visit odessahcc.org/banquet. Commissioners set to speak about American Rescue Plan Act funding. Ector County Commissioners at 10 a.m. today will discuss the $16.1 million that the county has received from the United States Congress's American Rescue Plan Act and consider their options for how to spend it. 2 weeks ago, they heard a plea from Medical Center Hospital for $7 million from the funding to buy ventilators and hire more staff to cope with the recent spike in coronavirus cases. Commissioners said that they would review the proposal and request from other entities for shares of the money along with the county's own needs and other business. The commissioners will hear a report from the Bickerstaff, Heath, Delgado, and Acosta law firms of Austin about political redistricting based on last year's national census. They will also consider a $50,000 budget amendment to cover medical contract services at the Law Enforcement Center, discuss topics related to the hearings held last week at the 2021-22 budget that will be adopted September 28th, consider hiring maintenance technicians for the rest of this fiscal year for $16.57 per hour, discuss applying for funding for the Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center from the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, consider renewing the Health Department's contract with Excella Software, review the county's contract with Travelers Indemnity Insurance and USI Insurance Service for the coverage of property, inland marine, commercial general liability, commercial's auto liability with a $10,000 deductible, commercial auto physical damage, commercial umbrella excess liability, employees benefit liability, law enforcement liability, public entity management liability, drone hull and liability, and public entity employment-related practices liability. Discuss the county's oil and gas leases with Brazos River Resources. Consider the sheriff's civil process fees. Review an interlocal agreement with the City of Odessa for the 2021 Burn Justice Assistance Program Award. And consider the Area Agency on Aging 2021-22 budget. COVID-19 visitor restrictions at ORMC. The health and safety of our patients, visitors, and employees and our community remains our top priority at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Therefore, in line with guidance provided by the CDC and the Texas State Department of Health related to COVID-19, ORMC will have visitor restrictions. Visitor restrictions. Pediatric care. No more than 2 designated visitors per hospital stay. End of life. No more than 1 visitor at a time, limited to immediate family only. Family visitors must remain outside the facility until rotated in. Maternity and labor and delivery. Units. 2 designated visitors, including labor partner, per hospital stay. Special care nursing. No more than 2 designated visitors per hospital stay. Other extenuating circumstances, such as hospice and end-of-life care, will also be considered based on the best interest and need of the individual patient. All exceptions must be approved by the care team. Medical, surgical, 1 adult visitor per stay. All patients who enter the hospital through available access points will be screened immediately upon arrival. Points of entrance will be limited to ER main entrance 24/7, West Campus South entrance. If you are not a provider working at our facility, a hospital employee, or seeking immediate medical attention, we ask that you avoid the hospital. If you are experiencing a cough, fever, and of shortness of breath, or have been in direct contact with someone with visitor will be required to conform with all the safety precautions. All patients who enter the hospital through the available access points will be screened immediately upon arrival. Points of entrance will be limited to ER main entrance 24/7, West Campus South entrance. If you are not a provider working at our facility, a hospital employee, or seeking immediate medical attention, we ask that you avoid the hospital. If you are experiencing a cough, fever, and or shortness of breath, or have been in contact with someone who has been diagnosed with COVID-19, please call your primary physician's office. Your physician will help determine whether you may come in for an appointment or if you should stay home and await further instructions. Lynx Conference addresses trauma and poverty. Speaker and author Elia Moreno highlights this year's Odessa Lynx Community Conference, set for 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday. This year it will be virtual due to COVID. The theme is Living Intentionally to Address Poverty. Erica Thomas, Executive Director of Odessa Lynx, said this is the eighth year the conference has been held. Thomas said about 150 people from all over attended last year. What's really special is the conference helps fuel our services and the things we do throughout the year. And it also provides a training opportunity for us and our partners, Thomas said. We really try to maximize and do our due diligence with every donation that comes in and every opportunity where we can learn and do better in the upcoming years. Marino of Canyon is the author of Permission to Rest and Living Intentionally, depicting her personal journey and insights on the importance of adding value to the lives of others in just 90 seconds. The Leadership Women's website said, Marino has many roles. She currently serves as the co-executive director of Texas Christian Community Development Network. In addition to her role as co-executive director, Marino is founder and CEO of Living Intentionally Ministries. Thomas said the registrations are flowing in. We think people are eager to learn and see how COVID has impacted people that experience generational poverty, people that have barriers and have been deeply impacted on top of existing barriers and obstacles that they are facing. So this definitely gives us a better lens and the perspective and how to serve those individuals as we all recover during this time, Thomas said. No one wants to say it, but Thomas observed that people are experiencing burnout and compassion fatigue and wondering what the end game is on COVID and its repercussions and what will things look like a year from now. Thomas noted that this is something people have not experienced in recent times. How are we properly processing that? Are we giving ourselves permission to reset, to heal, and come back to the things that we would normally do? That's very critical for our first responders and our secondary nonprofit crisis workers and our educators and the government officials and anyone that deals with people. It's very universal, so I think the timing of the content of our conference couldn't be more appropriate, Thomas said. She noticed that Marino is well-versed in dealing with people coming out of poverty and trauma. It's nice to be able to bring someone like that, that might be able to better equip us with our tools and better practices so we can all make the recovery back, she said. The speaker is chosen by a committee that meets with the agency's partners to discuss themes that are going on and trending practices. Sometimes, being a rural community, you're kind of at the last to get on the train. And we have definitely tried to make sure that we are ahead of the game in some of those practices. So we got together as a committee and we all recognized, hey, last year trauma was a big deal. Mental health was obviously a big topic, and we felt this year it was still very much an important topic. But I think the aspect of giving ourselves permission to rest, what does burnout look like? What does compassion fatigue look like? How do you pour into others when your cup isn't necessarily filled? And how do you make sure to prioritize filling your cup so that you can be impactful at the end of the day, she said. When they saw Marino's biography and spoke to her on the phone, Thomas knew that she was the right speaker. After the conference, Thomas said they asked people who attended what they would like to hear or learn about next year. That definitely has weighed on our decision on who we bring into our area, Thomas said. She added that this set of topics resonates with people outside traditional social and nonprofit sectors. Hospitals see the value of this content. They recognize this burnout and compassion fatigue. It has not been easy for them. Our first responders as well. We're definitely maxing out everyone on a customer service level. On a compassionate level, Thomas said. Museum sets events. The Ellen Noel Art Museum has several events coming up this week. Today, Tuesday, a newly added exhibit, Ave Maria, the Many Visions of the Madonna, focuses on the early days of the church, artists, and sculptors that have been creating paintings frescoes, mosaic statues, and sculptures of the Madonna, Virgin Mary, in all her various forms. Visit noelartmuseum.org/exhibitions for more details. Thursday, the museum is open until 8 p.m. Take a tour through the gift shop, create in the art house, tour the permanent collection, and take a stroll through George and Millie Rhoda's Sculpture and Sensory Garden. The museum's permanent collection has just been rotated out, and you will find pieces being exhibited for the first time from artists Trey Arnez, Rufino Tamoyo, Steve Goff, and more. Friday, bid farewell to summer with a free screening of The Princess Bride 1987 at the annual Movie Under the Stars beginning at 8:45 p.m. Drinks and snacks provided. Bring lawn chairs, friends, family, and all your favorite snacks to catch the classic film. Museum hours are Tuesday through Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. and Thursday from noon to 8 p.m. Admission is free. For more upcoming exhibit events and workshops at the Ellen Noel Art Museum, visit noelartmuseum.org and use hashtag VisitENAM. When posting photo of your visit at the museum for a chance to be featured on their social media channels. OC Board to consider tax rate. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet at 6:30 p.m. today in the Zant Community Room of the Salisbury Campus Center, 201 West University Boulevard. Trustees will consider approval of the tax rate. Earlier this month, the board approved a budget of $74,588,865, which includes $21,365,139 in restricted funds. The total tax rate for this year was 0.18965 per $100 evaluation. The proposed rate for 2021 is 0.201723 per $100 valuation. Supplemental agenda material shows a public hearing will be held at 6 p.m. September 9th in room 128 at the Salisbury Campus Center. A second public hearing will be at noon September 14th in room 128 at the Salisbury Campus Center, and the tax rate adoption will be at the regular board meeting September 28th. Which plans to build a $6.5 to $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility at Pinwell. The board also will consider approval of an interlocal agreement for a joint task force committee of school district, hospital district, college district, county, and city, and the appointment of a member of the Board of Trustees to the joint task force committee. Ector County ISD recently approved the same item. According to the ECISD board recap, the law requires that each census governmental bodies shall review the census data and determine if they need to withdraw boundary lines for their various election precincts. In the past, all of the local governing entities have joined together to coordinate the process and save expenses. This interlocal agreement for the Joint Task Force Committee provides for the formation of the committee comprised of all of the entities to address the redistricting issues and share the costs. The board will also consider conforming the 2021 budget to actual expenditures. Approval of Janice Hicks for Vice President of Institutional Effectiveness. She is currently Associate Vice President for Institutional Effectiveness, the OC website says. Among the informational items trustees will hear are an institutional effectiveness report and a vision 2030 plus update. The president's report from President Gregory Williams will include early college high school students returning to campus, OC connections, recruitment rush, and ECISD FAFSA night.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.